All right, I'm gonna start recording right now. So everybody, you ready for that loud noise?
This meeting is being recorded.
Thank you. Welcome to the August 18th, 2020 meeting of the San Luis Coastal Unified School District. We're going to take care of a couple of housekeeping matters before we address the agenda. And Dr. Prater, do you want to start with that? Then I'll have an announcement as well, and then we'll proceed with the agenda.
Yes, I'd just like to make an announcement that it is our commitment to provide translation services from English to Spanish during our board meetings. Whether they're study sessions or regular scheduled board meetings, especially as we are in Zoom. However, my apologies, tonight we are had an issue with the translation link on Zoom, so we're unable to provide that service tonight. However, moving forward, we'll see you at the September 15th board meeting and maybe even the September 10th board study session where we'll have that service available. Again, my apologies. Ms. Sheffer?
Thank you. And I just wanted to make an announcement that, as many of you may know, there is the possibility, I think it's a remote possibility because we're getting later in the day, but California, as you may know, is under a rolling blackout situation. So if by chance we lose this connection due to that occurring, we will need to immediately adjourn the meeting because we will lose all participants as well as a quorum of the board, and we will then immediately meet to determine our next meeting date to pick up where we left off. So hopefully that will not occur, but as I said, that is a remote possibility. So having said that, we will begin with our regular agenda. And our first item will be 4.01, addressing our closed session items. The board did meet in closed session immediately prior to this meeting. We had a conference with labor negotiators and agency designated representatives with regard to our employee organizations. So next, I would ask if we have consensus on the order of business. Thank you. What I'd like to do here, because we have several meeting minutes to approve, I'm going to see if we can approve them as a group. And what I'm going to do is just read out the list, similar to how we do our consent agenda. If anyone needs something pulled, please let me know, and we will address that one separately. So I have approval of minutes from our meeting of June 16, 2020, approval of minutes from June 30th, 2020. Oh, you know what? I'm wrong. I'm going to do this differently. I need to read the meeting date. So August, the meeting. Oh, no, that's, I am right. Sorry, I'm trying to read too many things at one time. Approval of minutes from July 7th. Do any of those have anything that need to be pulled and addressed separately? And if not, then I'd like a motion to address them as a group. Mr. Buckman, you need to unmute, please.
Okay. I'd be happy to make that motion.
Thank you. Okay, we have a motion by Mr. Buckman, a second by Mr. Millar. Catherine?
No, it's okay. I was going to second.
Oh, okay. But you approve. Now I'm doing the vote. We have to do it as a roll call.
Yes.
Okay. Mark?
Yes.
Evelyn?
Yes.
Chris?
Yes.
Walt?
Yes.
Marilyn?
Yes.
Thank you, and I as well. Next, we are going to item 6.01, and I'm very excited to see, hopefully, we have our new student representatives to the board. I'm going to mention their names. We'll see if either of the ones I know of are able to attend tonight. If they're not here, I'm going to ask Dr. Prater to kind of let us know who they are. And from I have Ben Jackson. Is Ben here tonight? He is not here, but Eric, would you do just kind of let the board know who Ben Jackson is, and hopefully he'll be able to attend at our next meeting.
Yeah, as you know, we have a long and wonderful history of student representatives on the board, and I don't know, they've brought so much humor and information and joy to the board process. So this year's San Luis Obispo High School senior ASB president and the student representative to the board is Ben Jackson. And similarly, over at Morro Bay High School, the senior ASB president is Rosalie Ronzon. And Rosalie is also on our student senate, has served on the student senate for the last 4 or 5 years. So she's an impressive young lady. And we're still working on the Pacific Beach High School representative, and we'll be sure to report that out once we have that discerned. So thank you.
It's something we always really enjoy is hearing from our student representatives, and we'll be excited to meet them via Zoom at a meeting soon. Yeah. Next is 7.01, which is correspondence to the board. And at the time the agenda was published, we had received correspondence from Elena Ehrenberg regarding outdoor schooling now. Thank you from SLC USD families. Laura Cooper, trimester system must be retained. Jennifer Shevitz, SLHS switch to semester system. Neil Berryman, SL San Luis High semester system. Sherry Love, parent of Morro Bay and San Luis High students. Josh McCammer, against switching away from semesters. Melissa Jackson, trimester, not semester. Carrie Burton, SAT and ACT. Maggie Browning, maintain trimester scheduling at San Luis High. Michael Berger, keep two letters from Mr. Berger regarding keeping San Luis High on the trimester system. Young McCann, regarding the semester system at San Luis High. Kyla Grafton, reopening San Luis schools and loans. Laura Galanos, racism in San Luis Coastal Unified School District. Molly Stoddard, small group on-site instruction. H. Tetsuyo Uyeda, fall guidelines proposal. Lucas Burton, ACT, SAT, and Aaron Moschetti, a concerned parent. And some of us on the board may have received additional correspondence, and all of the correspondence, when received, when it's directed to the board as a whole, becomes public record, and those letters are addressed. There is a link to them on the agenda. Our next item is public comment, and at this time, the board we welcome. Comments on matters of district interest. We can please be advised that the board is unable to engage directly with those commenting, but we do listen closely and are very interested in what you have to say. There is a time limit of 3 minutes for each speaker, and we strictly adhere to that. If you wish to make a public comment and have it read into the board, you can go to the link on our website and submit a written public comment. It will be provided to me in the course of the meeting, and I will read it. At this time, we generally look at public comment just having to do with items not scheduled as an agenda item on down later in the meeting. However, if you don't wish to wait until the item comes up on the agenda, you can address it now. And at this time, I have two public comments that were written and requested that they be read, and I have one person who wishes to speak. So I'll read the public comments first, and then we'll go to those who wish to speak. This is from Emily Pan. I'd like to comment on issues of racism in SLCUSD, specifically bias in the district's history curriculum. In school, students deserve a well-rounded education where all cultures are represented. The history curriculum should be developed so that it teaches students facts while allowing students to shape their opinions. Sophomore year of high school, students can choose to take world history or AP European history, meaning students looking for a rigorous class and GPA boost can only choose to learn about European history. While European history is important, other cultures should not be forgotten when studying history. Though other cultures are mentioned in the European history textbook, it's still biased to retell history from a European standpoint. By offering AP European history rather than AP World History, schools unconsciously teach students that the BIPOC community's history is not worth learning about. Living already in a predominantly white community, BIPOC students are often not treated equally, and learning only about European history reinstates the belief that BIPOC history isn't worthy and BIPOC are not central. A solution to eliminating this bias would be offering world history and AP World History rather than AP European History. Similarly, elementary school students learn about John Sutter and the white miners while studying the Gold Rush, as well as colonial times and the pioneers. Yet even though America is a land of immigrants, as well as the homelands of indigenous people, only the stories of European settlers are told in schools. The curriculum heavily influences students' beliefs, and presenting information from an unconsciously biased viewpoint may wrongly shape students' views of the BIPOC population. Schools should equally represent all cultures, which would make the district one step closer to treating BIPOC students with the same level of respect as their classmates. The next comment is from Stacy Hurt. To me, it makes no sense to send our children back to school if all staff and teachers are not comfortable going back to school. I think it would be highly more beneficial to our children to decide on virtual learning now and give the teachers time to plan to make it the best experience possible. Thank you. And then we have Petra Reynolds wanting to speak.
Yeah, let me see if Petra's available there.
Check.
I don't see her. Petra, if you are here, please unmute and proceed to speak. Nope, Petra does not appear to be here.
And then we're checking to see, is anyone else?
So if you'd like to speak at this moment in time, please look at the bottom of the screen where you see, help me here, is it share screen? And then, or click on participants. And then over there, there's a raised hand option. So please click on the raised hand right there. Miss Laura Gallanos has raised her hand. That's a perfect example of how to do it. So
okay.
Yeah.
So
Miss Laura Gallanos.
Laura Gallanos, and your time is starting now. Thank you.
I'm Laura Gallanos, and I wrote the letter Racism in SLCUSD. Thank you to all the students, friends, and community members that support me. You've given me the confidence to speak here today. It is time for change in the SLCUSD. You promote equity, but fail to acknowledge the racial injustices your students face. You plan to teach these values in school while leaving out the histories, injustices, and struggles your students experience. You have an obligation to teach and combat these unjust realities that many of your students have to go through. It is hard enough as a minority to address these issues, especially when no one is talking about them. Demands proposed in the letter benefit more than just BIPOC students. By educating students and teachers about racism, SLCUSD will give everyone the foundation to become mindful members of society who can rescind the hateful norms that are currently in place. celebrating and recognizing more cultures who build an inclusive community and knowledge that everyone will grow and learn from. BIPOC students have constantly been told that their culture was not the standard or mainstream enough to be properly recognized. Our values must represent the ethnicities within our schools. Having diversity counselors on campus will foster informative and supportive discourse for all the students. It will also provide BIPOC students with resources and guidance that they may lack. Being raised by white parents, I never had an adult figure to assist me in this area of life. By fulfilling these demands, SLCUSD can create a place where everyone feels welcome, where everyone's voice will be heard, and where everyone will be accepted. I am not speaking today to ask for your condolences. I'm speaking because I never want another student to feel less than, invalidated, and silenced like me and way too many students in your district have felt. I'm asking you today to meet the demands that myself and 165 other students, ranging from class of 1979 to 2023, want in our school district. Students and community members are committed to creating positive change within the SLCUSD, and I hope that you are too. I would like a discussion of the demands stated in the letter, providing diversity counselors to support minority students, required diversity workshops for staff on racism and how to mitigate it, and celebrating a wider range of cultures in the classroom, educating students from K through 12 about racism placed on the agenda. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your heartfelt and sincere comments. We appreciate it.
Ms. Hannah Fowler.
Hannah Fowler.
You're on mute, Hannah. So let me.
There you go.
Hi.
Hello, my name is Hannah Fowler, and I'm a 2019 graduate of San Luis Obispo High School. I'm of mixed heritage and I identify as Black, and I'm here to talk about the importance of BIPOC representation in school curriculums. I learned about Black history mostly through my family, not my schools. My mom grew up poor in the South American country of Guyana and emigrated to the United States, where she went to college to study graphic design. My father, who also grew up poor, is now a professor of architecture at Cal Poly. As a Black student at SLOHS, I struggled my identity, and it didn't help that I rarely saw people who looked like me in the books we read or in the textbooks we studied. For instance, in U.S. history, when we talked about President Nixon's war on drugs, which was continued by President Reagan, we failed to discuss the devastating effect it has had and continues to have on Black communities. Black people currently make up a large portion of the prison population and are often given much longer and harsher sentences as compared to white people. And while we may have talked about Martin Luther King as the peaceful leader of the civil rights movement, we neglected a large portion of an important movement that would have led us to the incredible legacy of Representative John Lewis and the story of Selma. As a junior in AP literature, I read Joseph Conrad's Heart of Darkness. Throughout the book, white men were seen as civilized, while Black people were labeled as, quote, prehistoric men. Their humanity frequently questioned, quote, we are accustomed to look upon the shackled form of a conquered monster, but there you look at a thing monstrous and free. I understand that this is a work of literature, but I was also very disturbed and upset by Conrad's description of Black people as devoid of humanity. Where were the books by Black writers that would have shown that Black people are people? I felt that we failed to discuss the harmful and degrading way Conrad continuously portrayed Black people. By including the book and any like it in the curriculum, we are reinforcing the notion that people who look like me, people of the African diaspora, are inferior. An article in the Washington Post quotes a book that addresses the importance of teaching Black narratives in schools. The article states that, quote, when Black history and Black contributions are denied in the curriculum and by those who teach it, Black people are themselves denied. We continue to teach the works of celebrated authors like William Shakespeare, Nathaniel Hawthorne, Charles Dickens, and Joseph Conrad, but we ignore accomplished Black writers such as Angela Davis, Toni Morrison, James Baldwin, and so many more. How can we expect students to have equal educational opportunity if we have a curriculum that is not fully representative of the student body? San Luis Obispo Unified School District should acknowledge the systemic racism that has existed throughout history and continues to exist today by recognizing and including books by underrepresented authors in the curriculum. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Those are important comments. Next, we have Jennifer Bauer, who will be followed by Olivia Dawn.
Hi, do I... Do I go on the screen or do I just do it with, I'm sorry.
Your choice.
Okay. I'm trying to turn my video off. Okay, there. Hi, I'm Jennifer Bauer and I'm a teacher in the district. I wasn't planning on speaking, but I'm here tonight because in support of Laura. She's a friend of my daughter's and she let me read her letter about a week ago. And as a teacher, when I read her letter, there was so much in that letter that I just wasn't aware of that our students go through. And so I'm just speaking today to encourage you. We did a year as teachers doing the equity, and I just thought that was amazing. And then we kind of dropped the ball. I mean, we still talk about it a little bit, but I think there's a lot more work to be done to help us teachers to recognize these things and to continue to grow and learn on how we can support our students, especially as a white teacher. And so I just encourage you to keep this going and help us teachers to help our students. I'm listening to a great podcast right now called Nice White Parents. And I really encourage everyone to listen to it. I've learned a lot and I see a lot in that podcast that has happened in our own schools that I've been at with white parents kind of taking over the conversation and leaving out parents, our Latinx parents. And so I'm just speaking today to just say, I think we just, please help us with this work. And I'd be happy to be on a committee or anything, but it's really eye-opening for me to read Laura's letter because there's just a lot that I'm not aware of. So thank you for the great job you're doing.
Thank you. And then Olivia.
Hi, I'm Olivia Dong and I am also here in support of Laura Galanos. I am a SLOHS class of 2020 graduate and am biracial, half Chinese, half white. And while San Luis Obispo High School is wonderful in many ways, it falls short in an essential department, encouraging students to learn about race and ethnicity and even gender and sexuality. I, along with countless BIPOC students who attend or have attended SLOHS, have been subject to microaggressions and, in general, insensitive peers and teachers. From being singled out by my teachers as the only Asian student in class to my peers mocking stereotypical Asian accents, it was easy to feel othered during my time as a student, especially because our school is primarily white and teachers made no effort to correct students who perpetuated racial stereotyping. Ignorance regarding race and ethnicity showed itself in another way, too. I wrote an expressions article in which I asked my peers whether or not they had seen or experienced racism on SLOHS campus. While each BIPOC student responded in the affirmative, the white students I asked responded in the negative. In short, they believed racism did not show itself on campus. The fact of the matter is, it does. It simply flies under the radar. Our campus, especially because students are at an age at which beliefs and morals can be fundamentally shifted, needs to be one on which diversity is appreciated and celebrated. But this cannot happen until students are encouraged to learn about said diversity. Not once during my high school career did my teachers bring up discussions on race, ethnicity, gender, or sexuality. Sure, we discovered the governments of Asian countries in AP language and AP government, but racist comments and the mocking of accents festered. Jokes about gayness were written on the whiteboard as my teacher simply sat there. SLOHS cannot claim their mission statement that they empower students to be, quote, healthy, productive members of a diverse society if students are not taught to respect and celebrate diversity, to look beyond their white privilege and learn empathy. SLCUSD needs to take responsibility for its role in shaping students' perspectives and the way they treat their fellow humans. Aside from providing counselors and other modes of support for students of color, the school district needs to mandate education on race and ethnicity, just as it mandates health education. Knowing the functionality of race and ethnicity within our communities and how they affect us and our peers is health, and it cannot be ignored. Thank you.
Thank you, Olivia. Thank you. Next, we have Tara Clapham.
Go ahead, Tara.
Hi, my name is Tara Clapham. I'm the English Learner Specialist at Pacheco Elementary, and I've been working in the district as an English Learner Specialist for 14 years. And I just wanted to thank all of the of our youth that has spoken up tonight. Thank you so much. And I also wanted to speak a bit to the idea and the thought of ethnic studies, to a high school, potentially having it be a mandated requirement for graduation. I see that this would really be a tremendous step for equity, an actual real action step for equity for our school district. Unfortunately, many of the things that have been said tonight have also happened to my daughter, who is 16 years old, and she did attend San Luis Obispo High School. So I speak from both a professional and a personal level on this. And I really believe that something like an ethnic studies program would be transformative for our district, from the students, the staff, the administration, the community at large. We know that our students need an education that reflects their own heritage and experience. They need to learn about themselves and love themselves. We need diversity in our staffs. An ethnic study program could provide a lot of these things, and it would be a real action step that we could take for equity. And Santa Barbara School District has already adopted this, and so has Santa Maria Bonita High School. And there are many Cal Poly professors that are also really interested in seeing this happen in San Luis Coastal Unified School District. So we have a lot of amazing partners, potential partnerships as well in our community. And again, I just feel very strongly that this is needed. This is needed in our school district. And I look forward to having more conversations around this, but most of all, just some real action steps for our youth. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? All right. Thank you for those comments. And we will now move on to our superintendent's updates. And first, we have our business and budget update.
Yeah, it's been a crazy time. I'm going to share a few things with the board. I could probably go on all night if we talked about everything that's been happening the past few weeks, of course. But I just so the board knows, I did go around with Chris Bonin on Monday. We visited every single site. You know, with people coming back onto campus, teachers, staff, I wanted to make sure that our secretaries and our office protocols were in place, make sure that people feel safe, that you know, everybody was secure. So those were really good meetings. We got more PPE supplies out today to staffs, and I think the sites appreciated the fact that we stopped by to see them. So that the board knows, word went out today to all parents in terms of food service. So currently, the waiver that we can feed all students is over. So they have not renewed that, you know, the ability for us to just give every single person who comes through the line a free meal. So Aaron has put together again the meal kits. So it's basically you know, for if you're free or reduced, it is still continues to be free. So we have that link out for parents to sign up. It continues for I believe until the end of September for those that were on the program for last year. But you know, for those parents and families out there who want to continue to get the free meals, to please fill out the form, go to the link. We have both paper copies at sites, as well as can provide them a computer, a way to do that. You know, it's important that they do it. So it, for parents, they can still purchase the meal plan. So it's basically a week worth of meals. So it'll be a Wednesday that they can come drive through and pick those up. And it's a breakfast and lunch for $10. So it's still a really good deal, right, for the entire week for people to have. And again, we'll continue to monitor that. Aaron is actually speaking in the CDE food service meeting for the entire state tomorrow. Should be no surprise to the board, right, that she's a leader in that group, and hopefully we'll get that turned around. She has been instrumental in the last few weeks to get, you know, food items from the LA Food Bank, that we've been able to continue handing out meals for free through this time. There is an informational item for the board tonight. So the 45-day revise has been put in. So we found the, you know, basically after the governor's budget is approved, we find out exactly what the budget is, that those information come out. So we do have approximately $5 million in funds that that we'll, you know, we'll be sharing with the board. Kim's going to be putting together, you know, the new kind of not LCAP, but the local kind of continuity, a plan for the board for approval. And just so the board knows, we have been, since the board made their decision in July, you know, hiring a ton of staff, ordering extra Chromebooks. Jeremy just had to order an extra, you know, double batch of the hotspots for kids. So supplies, PPE. So we have been using those federal funds to make sure that, you know, our teachers and kids are ready day one. And you know, we'll continue to supplement whatever we need to make sure that people are safe on campus and that students and teachers have what they need. So it's really important for us to do that. So that 45-day revise kind of outlines those. Mr. Buckman did bring up in a conversation today with me about the charter school impact, right? So that was something that kind of came out of the blue that, you know, like with Bellevue Santa Fe, a charter that's approved by the district, that all of a sudden now these state-approved charters that we also have to pay for them. So that is something that because they have the ADA, we're basically, we have to pay the charter schools next year the same amount, whether or not they have 10 kids or continue to have the same number of kids that they have. But Chris Daller is going to be working on setting up our own independent study so that, you know, if we're going to have to pay for those programs, we might as well have a better program ourselves. But that'll be something he'll work on over the course of the year and we'll share with you. So those are kind of the key things. I do want the board to know that I did kind of put the sustainability committee that we talked about in the spring off, you know, with kids gone and just, you know, everything crazy, but I haven't forgot about it. We do have the signups from staff, so I will be kicking that in here as soon as school starts and reaching out to a new set of students that may want to participate, and we'll get that committee going soon. I just wanted to let school start and kind of get people on their way before we begun that.
Thanks, Ryan. And I know, you know, we can all acknowledge that there's a lot going on. Under normal circumstances, the week before school starts is really a lot going on, and it's everything so magnified this year. So I think everyone's aware of that. It doesn't mean it's any easier, but this is a big deal. Next is our educational services and COVID-19 update, Ms. McGrath.
Yes, thank you. Happy to give you an update. So as everyone knows, our first day of school is this coming Monday, August 24th. It was scheduled for the 17th, and the board, with much appreciation, as everyone's really working incredibly hard this week, have that set for Monday, August 24th. So on Monday, we did have our back-to-school kickoff, virtually, of course. And Dr. Prater had a very impactful video to help kick off to almost 1,000 participants on Zoom. And I, you know, believe all of you were there to see that. We sent the video out to all staff as we had a lot of requests for that. You know, a big thank you to Rick Mayfield, Laura Storm, our MTSS TOSAs that have done an incredible amount of work, really focusing on what does great instruction and what does great relationships and connections look like in a digital learning format. So we've created some real solid consistencies across our distance learning platform around what are we going to do in a unified fashion, and how do we take this as an opportunity? How do we say, you know what, let's say I enjoy the challenge instead of making this into a terrible situation. We kind of took the angle of, you know, there's a lot of businesses right now that are changing their models and that are creating experiences for kids, as our kids may show up into those businesses one day that need a different skill set. So let's be a part of helping them be prepared for the business industry opportunities that they may walk into. So all staff is doing an incredible job this week. People that have any kind of instructional role, teachers, aides, paras, et cetera, are really looking at how to make their instruction great and really adjust it from our spring kind of more emergency situation. So, you know, big thanks to all the great, there's collaboration, professional development, lots of excellent work going on all week long. I do want to also say that today we had the real pleasure of doing a formal launch of the iInnovate program. You've been a great supporter of this and I really appreciate it. As you know, we have this unique connection between the Education Foundation that's its own 501c3 and your support of an executive director for that foundation, which creates a unique partnership. That this unique partnership is allowing us to really do some amazing things. So today we were able to formally announce a $1 million gift from the Harold J. Miosi Charitable Trust. This $1 million gift is allowing us to do a couple of things. First of all, it's creating innovation labs in all 10 of our elementary schools. And although many of us were wishing that we had a bunch of little kids running around in those rooms and creating and collaborating in there, we know that we need to wait for a different time for that. But to me, something so inspiring was that the teachers on special assignment that are working on this iInnovate project, along with school district membership and foundation membership, said, you know what, we realize that kids can't be here. And so let's be models for being creative and being innovative. And instead, let's see what we can do to take those labs to them. So they're creating kind of My Lab boxes. And they're creating really innovative projects in the lines of engineering, social emotional learning, creativity, different projects that are actually being picked up by kids when they get their devices. The boxes are going home. I believe there's about 4 boxes per grade level. And then kids will be able to open up this box of fun surprises that has really hands-on opportunities for them to engage in while they're at home. So, I just applaud people that are willing to say, you know, this isn't my first choice, but we're going to make the best of this. And we're going to get something in kids' hands that can help them really be innovative and creative. And I know that we all feel like now more than ever, kids are going to be hungry for those hands-on opportunities. So really neat day. So excited to create this partnership with Howard Carroll. And through the Harold J. Miosi Charitable Trust, just an incredible, really historic gift, and so proud for us to be the recipients of that. And then COVID update. So as we've said, we're starting into our distance learning here on Monday. We've been sending out a lot of information to parents, holding really impactful parent forums on a lot of the major topics, really well attended, people asking great questions. It's an opportunity to hear information and to also field questions and for us to be able to discuss those answers and create some clarity around the things that we do have clarity around. We're still going to work towards pursuing in-person opportunities as it is possible for our special education or possibly some other, really vulnerable, high-need small groups. So we will be able to continue to look to see how we can help to solve that for kids that we know are in really unique situations. So that's where we are right now. As you know, it changes often. So we will continue to give this update and let you know where things stand. Happy to discuss the new LCAP, convenient, same 4 letters, and we'll discuss that later in the agenda today. Thanks.
Thank you. And I'll just add that I checked out the Tribune online late this afternoon, and there is a very nice article in the online edition, at least, about the iInnovate and that funding, as well as the challenge boxes, and a great description of those. So thank you. Next, we have our Measure D update.
Yeah, so just a couple of quick things for the board. Number one, some exciting news came out this week that, Measure D, when it was passed, the bond rate was $49 per 100,000, initially when it went out. And so, that periodically gets reevaluated with the county treasurer, with our bond, advisor. And so this week they, because the AV or the assessed value in our school district, along with good reserves that were there to pay off the bonds, they were able to lower that payment to taxpayers from 49 down to 39. good news for everyone. And so I wanted to make sure that we shared that. We'll put out a kind of a press release and share that with the public as well. On the Measure D front, from a construction standpoint, the theater seating got delivered this week at San Luis Obispo High School. So this is the retractable seating that will go in along with the portable seating had already been here. So that was exciting. Mr. Holcomb, myself, Mr. Bonin, the team, we've been going through all of our plans, really making some revisions in terms of budgetary savings, but yet keeping the, you know, kind of the key aspects in line throughout. We have finished the track. A plan is now complete, and so kind of working with the site on when to kind of bring that forward to work on. So we'll continue to work on the site with that. You know, with CIF moving all the sports to the winter, which just trying to arrange what the best opportunity is to do some of this work. And then we're also pushing the architects and ACME to push forward any infrastructure projects that they can do between now and January. You know, without students on campus, this is the time if we're going to tear things up. You know, access wise, those types of things to try to get things accomplished as much as we can. So Julie's finishing on audited actual. So I'll be bringing forward kind of the latest budget where we're at as of the end of the fiscal year 1920 to the board soon.
Great. Thank you. All right. Our next agenda item is 9.01. It is a resolution with regard to Measure D.
Yeah. So I was just actually on Monday at the Bishop's Peak new office there and staff room and restrooms, and it looks beautiful. So I really look forward to taking the board around. Absolutely willing to do individual tours with board members. If you want to meet, we can stay socially distanced and masked and go through the site. But I really am looking forward to the day when kids and parents are back and to see the new traffic pattern in the front of that campus. And hopefully we're going to be able to keep you know, cars out of that neighborhood as much as possible as we go through. So really positive on that. So tonight, since that project is done, it's time to kind of end the lease. And so there's actually three items on the board agenda tonight that relate to that. But this first one is to pass the resolution that is presented.
Okay. First, I will see if there's any discussion from the public about this item. And seeing none, I'll come back to the board. Is there any board discussion about this item? If not, then a motion to adopt this resolution would be appreciated. Mr. Unger.
So moved.
Thank you.
Second.
Okay, I'm not sure. Walt, was that you?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. All right, so we have a motion by Chris, a second by Walt. I will do the roll call vote. Chris.
Yes.
Walt.
Yes.
Mark. Marilyn.
Yes.
Catherine. Yes. Evelyn.
Yes.
Okay, and me as well. So that motion carries 7-0. And our next item is 10.01, our COVID update number one.
Yes, as promised in the discussion we had on July 16th, we with the board, part of that board meeting, it was requested by the board to me that we have monthly updates regarding the status of COVID in our county, our state, our county, and how it might impact our district. So I created a PowerPoint, a brief template that we will utilize and maybe develop as we go. But I think this is a good start. I will keep it brief. I know all of us are living in it and reading and listening to things. But Mandy, could I ask you to pull up that particular template? Jeremy, are you there?
Yes, I am here. And Mandy's still here as well.
Bear with us just one moment, please.
Okay.
appears that Mandy has lost connection. So can we work around that for a couple minutes, Dr. Prater?
So, Jeremy, can you do me a favor and make Kim or Ryan the co-host?
Yes, sir.
There we go. All right, here we go. All right. So this is the first update and since the board's recommendation in July to go distance learning through December. And so we will have one of these each month, and you'll begin to see the evolution of our thinking and based on the data that we have. Next slide, please. So the timeline, as you all are aware, boy, I can't speak that quickly, Mandy. I appreciate the confidence, though. All right. So the March 16th was the first day of our school closure being implemented, and the board acted on March 13th, Friday. That timeline pretty much is consistent up and down the state of California. June 29th, Senate Bill 98 came out, which really highlighted the differences in expectations for student learning through a distance model. And this guided much of our negotiations with our labor partners, and it proved to be very helpful. July 16th, the board took my recommendation, which included complete distance learning through December 2020, and except for the students that are most vulnerable, which we are going to discuss a little bit later. However, this recommendation was made based on infection rates in SLO County. July 17th, the very next day, SLO County was placed on a watch list by the state of California. And August 24th, this coming Monday, is the first day of school distance learning. So you'll note that this week, our teachers started in a full week of preparation and professional training, as well as our students are beginning to receive, and families are beginning to receive their schedules and pickup information for materials, technology, and so forth. Next slide, please. We also know that this objective for this particular presentation is going to look at national and state trends, providing you COVID infection updates for our county, and if any guidelines are revised, which they have been since we met last, and then just familiarize ourselves with timelines and feedback. Next slide. So what are we looking at nationally? As of last week, the cases in America are 5.25 million with 167,000 deaths. The current state metrics are over 500,000 cases with over 10,000 deaths. And our county, the counties in California, many of which are on the watch list as of now. The CDC came out with warnings for the fall. And this is what really concerns me, which is why we will also continue to keep you updated. And the warnings from the CDC are that the co-infection, potential for co-infections of COVID, seasonal flu, and the cold bug could really impact the health of individuals, families, and staff. So this, and communities. So this is something we'll keep our eyes on. Next slide, please. In San Luis Obispo County, we have approximately 2,300 cases with 18 deaths. And as of last Friday, the infection rate was 212 per 100,000 residents. And this places us in an interesting situation if we were to bring back students, because the watch list was based on 100 per 100,000 residents. The next layer is if there are 200 or more per 100,000 residents of infections, then they're suggesting that waivers will not be considered or should not be considered for bringing kids back to school. So this is something, this number we'll keep looking at very closely. In speaking with Dr. Borenstein, she did raise a good point, which is that these numbers include the California Men's Colony. And so some of these numbers might be more severe than they might be for the general population. Next slide, please. I wanted you to know that there is much discussion about the waiver process, the approval of that waiver process. We've been in close contact with County Public Health, as well as the county County Office of Education, to decipher what that approval process looks like. There is a waiver that has been a waiver document that we have looked at, and it has to do with elementary only, kindergarten through sixth grade, and anyone under the age of 12 or younger. And so this particular waiver process we're looking at, but we're not particularly proceeding with this particular item, because the next item has to do with educating our most vulnerable student populations. And this was part of your recommendation, or part of your action to my recommendation. And we have just learned that the California Department of Education just revised their guidelines and parameters last week, so that schools can actually educate in small groups with very tight restrictions our most vulnerable, especially our special education populations. And so we're working very closely with the County Public Health Department, Dr. Borenstein, to consult with them to ensure that when we are designing these programs for our most vulnerable students, that we do it in the safest manner possible. There continues to be barriers and opportunities, a lot of confusion as it relates to the waiver process versus the non-waivers, which allow us to bring back our most vulnerable students. And so this is not a wholesale bring everyone back. This is us really looking at ways we can bring our most vulnerable students back into in-person learning, where teachers and support staff have an option. They can choose to be with these students. And in, as of last Friday, or I want to say yesterday even, there are a number of our educators and support staff volunteering to go with in-person learning. And so we're designing those programs as we speak. Again, these are for a very select few group of students who we feel are really in great need of in-person support. And so that's what we'll be looking at doing, and I will keep you updated. We're working hard on defining what those select vulnerable populations look like, and we'll continue to keep you posted. Finally, I will say to you that the phased-in strategy of starting with our most desperate students with the greatest numbers of needs, that we begin with those students and support them. And then as we get better and better at it, we can phase in additional students who have severe needs, but maybe not as significant. So therein lies my presentation this evening, and I open it up for any questions you might have.
So first I'll see if anyone from the public has any questions. Okay, and then I'll come back to the board. I see Walt.
Eric, during some of the public comment before we made the decision, and we were outlining the metrics for what type of opening we would have, I think it was 150 cases per 100,000, if I'm remembering correctly.
It was actually 100 per 100,000.
Oh, okay. Thank you. And there was some comment about you know, criticism of that one metric and suggesting there were other metrics. I'm not sure I agreed with any of that, but have you looked at other metrics or other things that would guide us in addition to that 100 per 100,000?
Yeah, that's a really great question. Well, I have not expanded my definition of that metric because it's changing so quickly. It began with the watch list metric, and then it moved to another metric of 200 per 100,000. And if that were the case, then they suggested no students back and in the waiver process. And then in speaking with Dr. Bornstein at the county public health department, she mentioned to us superintendents that was a suggestion, not a mandate. So I will need to really massage these numbers and bring forward to you some ideas on how we could better refine our trajectory for our decision making. I think based on what I'm seeing, I think the guidelines are shaping up right now from the CDE and the California Department of Health, where they're really becoming better and better at providing these ranges, these metrics themselves. So I will continue to dig in. My next presentation to you, I will bring to you some other suggestions, ideas for ways we could strengthen that metric. Okay.
I see Evelyn has a question.
Oh, Evelyn, you need to unmute.
Is that good? Okay.
Yes.
One of the things, you know, when is it looking like it's basically boiling down to local LEAs determining, you know, metrics? And then that's one part of the question. And then the other part of the question is Dr. Bornstein providing us with localized information regarding, you know, we have numerous child cares that are currently operating, private schools that are looking to open, you know, sports camps that have been in operation. Is she able to provide us with what is happening within those settings that have, you know, staff members, not necessarily SLCSUD staff, but close contacts with adults and students that might give us some more information?
Those are two really good questions, and I don't really have great answers right now. What I can say, though, is in terms of the county public health providing localized metrics, Dr. Bornstein has been, you know, very very public and optimistic about the ways in which schools can and might reopen, and if the numbers, which gets to Walt's point, if there's a ratio or a proportional analysis going on with regard to the rate of infection, the rate of change. And so that is something I'm interested in looking at. But to get to your original question, which is, you know, is anyone out there saying, here are the metrics that you need to follow? And the answer to that is no. The closest we've been able to get to anything is the state saying, here's the watch list number that gets you on a watch list in the county. And then lately, here's the number that we would recommend you not allow for a waiver if it's over 200 per 100,000. So that's the best I have on that. And then the other question, you're right. In our county, it's a bit confusing because there are childcare agencies, you know, having childcare, which is fantastic. To my knowledge, there's not a whole lot of spread among those childcare providers. So it's a great data set. And in fact, we're going to benefit. We're going to hear later in the evening from Mr. Pinkerton about that. So in terms of the sports clubs and the various things, I've heard those things as well. And I imagine they'll have a few things they can share with us. The key is, you know, childcare is determined by a proportion of students per adults per space. The same would hold true, I believe, to some of these club sports that are being approved. However, when it comes to schools, I will say to you that that is one of the bigger stumbling blocks, because you have the infection rates in our county and in our state increasing, and you have this great need for parents to be able to go to work and have someone to be with their children. So we also don't want to be responsible for a situation that we see in other states right now, where schools open up, sure enough, it spreads, and they close the school back down again. And that's something that I'm very tuned into and I want to avoid. So yes, I will listen to Dr. Borenstein and feedback that she has learned. And like I said, we meet with her regularly, and we try to glean as much information from her as we can. What's tricky about her position is the feds and the state give a set of guidelines. The California Department of Education gives another set of guidelines. And then you have the local impact and how to make sense of all that. It's a really tricky situation. But the good news is over the next few months, we'll be able to really analyze it and become experts. And hopefully by the time December rolls around, it'll be very clear to us what the correct path forward is with respect to St. Louis Coastal and educating our kids safely.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else? Thank you very much, Dr. Prater.
You're welcome.
Okay, our next item is the new LCAP and timeline.
Thank you. Is Mandy available to share the screen?
And I also allowed you to share it, so whichever way you want to go.
Go right ahead if you already have it there. So while we're pulling up the document, I want to make a couple of key points. So it's a little confusing because these two major documents, LCAP that you know previously, that we've known for years now, that is a guiding document that helps us to ensure that we are doing steps and guiding funding to address socioeconomically disadvantaged EL and foster homeless youth students. That is what we typically think of as our LCAP document. So now we have this learning continuity and attendance plan that has the same four letters. So I want to make a real clear distinction between the two documents. As you'll remember, you previously approved the kind of pre-LCAP document that we were talking about. And those actions, those key points for us still create a long-term guiding document for us about where our district continues to head, the big goals, big priorities, big tasks that we want to accomplish, even when we're in this unusual situation. We still want to keep progressing as a school district. For example, our multi-tiered system of support, our work with equity, our work with iInnovate, those major initiatives, closing our achievement gap, addressing social emotional learning, those are still the big components that are within the LCAP that we think of as our guiding document that goes above and beyond to address SED, EL, and foster homeless youth. Okay. This document, I want you to think of separately. So this document is a document that's being required by the state. It's the learning continuity and attendance plan. It is just looking at how we can address and use the funds to address the current, most immediate, pressing, in the moment needs related to COVID-19 and this distance learning situation that we're in. Okay, so two very distinct, different purposes, two very different documents. So today I want to show you what this, this is a, you know, a blank document today for us to be able to see. Here's what the structure is. Here's what it's going to ask of us. I would love to have any public input if people see here after looking at this and would like to give input about ways that we need to make sure that we're utilizing these funds and actions we need to take. Again, for the immediate, just to address the current quarantine COVID-19 situation that we're in. Okay. Mandy, if you don't mind scrolling down, you can see it just starts with general information. It's going to ask for stakeholder engagement. So we will be devising ways to gather information from stakeholders through surveys, forums, et cetera, beginning with tonight. If you continue there, you'll see that it talks about in-person instructional offerings next. So it asks us to describe the actions that the local education agency, the LEA, will take to offer classroom-based instruction whenever possible. And then it asks for those actions related to in-person instructional offerings and even asks us to account for the funds related to that. You'll see next that it asks about our distance learning program. It asks us to describe the ways that we are offering a continuity of instruction and how we're also giving access to devices and to connectivity like the MiFi hotspots, et cetera. The next thing you'll see is it's going to ask to look at pupil participation. So you'll remember a different attendance standard, right? How are we in making sure that students are attending and engaging? Next, you'll see what the professional development plan, just like I mentioned earlier, we started with some, you know, elaborate professional development that's been taking place, and teachers and other instructional educators working incredibly hard to create a great learning environment for students this fall. It talks about staff roles and responsibilities, supports for pupils. Notice the wording here is interesting, with unique needs. So there must be something elaborate there that's not calling it, you know, special education. It's keeping it more broad than that. That could be homeless. That could be students that, you know, are these vulnerable groups that are really needing our attention. And then it looks at actions related if you're within the distance learning program to describe that, the funds, and whether we're contributing. If you keep scrolling down, Mandy, you'll see the next section is talking about how are we addressing learning loss. So you'll remember that we started to create a launch plan, and we are implementing that currently. That's looking at academic loss, social emotional issues, and how we can be really methodical about addressing that. So you'll see those strategies that we address there. Next, it goes into mental health, social emotional well-being. So we will look at what are we doing going above and beyond considering this current situation that we're in to address these needs. And then it goes on to look at pupil engagement. What kind of outreach are we doing to ask questions and gather feedback there? And if you can keep scrolling down for me. Thank you. Talks about school nutrition, and we'll be able to describe everything that's been happening there. And the last section, I believe, here is this increased or improved services for foster youth, English learners, and low-income students. So you can see it's the same three students, same three student groups, I should say, that are addressed within the more long-term LCAP document. If you don't mind scrolling down a little more, Mandy. Thank you. So this will look at what are those things that we're doing above and beyond. Okay. It talks about, you know, how are we offering these services for foster youth, English learners, and low-income students? And not just what services, but how are those being increased or improved? It's a key component there. So this is the draft that we've already started, you know, gathering input, started asking what do we need to be doing? You know, what do you see as the need? How can we best utilize these funds? As Ryan mentioned in his update, you know, some things are obvious: buying devices, making sure we have adequate devices for staff and for families, MiFi hotspots, social emotional learning, universal screening for SEL and also for academic loss. Some of those things, you know, we're already diving in, doing, and that sort of thing. But we're also interested in hearing feedback, hearing input about what other things should we make sure to address, and how can we utilize these funds and this plan just for this immediate need. So that's what I have to share today. Again, in summary, just keep in mind the difference between the LCAP that we think of as the traditional LCAP, this just learning continuity and attendance plan that is the immediate need, how we're just immediately addressing the issue that we're in due to COVID-19, gathering feedback and starting to look at what are we doing to make sure we're addressing those different areas. Next, I'll bring the document, the draft of that document filled out. Again, like I said, we'll continue getting input and gathering information in order to complete that. Happy to answer any questions, and then I know Ellen will open it up for us as well.
Thank you. So first I'd like to go to the public. All right, then we'll come back to the board. Any questions on this from the board at this time? Evelyn. You're muted, Evelyn.
Oh, sorry. Sorry about that. Ms. McGrath, thank you. I was wondering, it seems like such a compressed, you know, timeline, and we've done such a great job, you know, for the LCAP and reaching out for getting stakeholder input. So are we looking at, and how would we explore additional ways to, you know, dialogue with these, you know, other groups apart from, you know, surveys? I mean, we can't do in person, but what more personal, I guess, direct contact via phone or something that we could really dig in deeper? I don't know. Is that even a concern, or is it something? What do you think?
Yeah, you make a good point. It is an additional challenge, you know, in these times when you can't, you know, just see someone in the hallway, grab input, you know, have in-person interactions. I'll tell you, for example, that ELACs and DLACs are still being held virtually. You know, Rick Mayfield asking groups, you know, to talk about their needs, what we can do to support, what we can do to help, what they see. I do think we have to be creative about it, is we do need to do these offerings in the way that we're gathering feedback in a virtual format. But I do think we can do that. And I do think that we have a lot of contact. We principals hear a lot, food services, when families are coming through and they're just asking them, how are you doing? What do you need? Our family resource center, et cetera. There are a lot of opportunities that we hear from families and ask for ideas about what we can do to help support them.
So does this form and this, I guess, because will it, does it look at, and would we be able to, as board members, look at what certain groups are saying, or is it all, I mean, I don't know enough about this to say, oh, this is what our EL parents are saying, this is what our, you know, homeless parents are saying. I mean, I know there's a summary, but would we as a district and as trustees be able to see that, and would that be important?
That's a good point. You know, that first section there says, what input did you receive? So obviously we wouldn't have that, you know, per person, but it would be more summarized information of what feedback, what input we're hearing. To be honest, you're right, it's a quick timeline, and I have not started to compile it in a way that anyone could see anything. You know, we've started, you know, just notes and things about gathering the information, but we'll need to, you know, I look at creating another parent forum, you know, opening that up to people. And then, like I said, being deliberate about going to some of those groups virtually and asking specifically for their feedback. How I'm gathering it and what that looks like, not sure yet.
Okay. Thank you.
And we shouldn't lose sight of the fact, Mrs. McGrath, and to the board, that we spent the better part of an entire year, last year, pre-COVID, reaching out and having deep conversations with multiple groups for countless hours. So that formed the LCAP, which you adopted in June. We knew that this document, this mandate from the state, they're ironically calling it the same acronym, but it's the local continuity and attendance plan. We will continue to seek input. However, we come from a very robust base. That LCAP that was adopted by the board in June will serve to influence this this trajectory, and we will use the current document to refine it. But we have a long view here, and this new LCAP is really about trying to identify very specifically how we're supporting our targeted groups of students. And so that is going to be our mission. That's going to be our focus. But our LCAP, we're not driving blindly here. Our LCAP serves to inform us, and the board already adopted it. Now, remember, we didn't quite have clear view back in June what it would look like today. So now the state has come out with the new LCAP and telling us that we basically have less than a month to, or a little more than a month to adopt it. And so that makes sure, in my mind, it means to me, the state wants to make sure that we're using these resources to focus our energies, to give it to the students in greatest need. And to Evelyn's point, I think that's what you're asking us, is how do we know what those needs are specifically to these more marginalized populations of families that are really in need of help. So with that, we are going to do extra parent forums. We're going to build on the foundation that we've already built from the LCAP, which is really good. And you see evidence of that in our teacher training this week and in the ways in which we're training our staff and preparing for the next 3 months. Chris?
One of the things that I think we've tried to do, and I would encourage us to continue to do, is to reach out to our students. I know Dr. Prater, the Student Senate, has been very successful in trying to get the student voice and student impact, influence. And so I'm hoping that we'll continue to be, do that in spite of the distance learning. And then the other thing, I just want to give really kudos to our staff, because I think our distance learning plan really has helped set the stage for the things that we'll be talking about in this document. So thanks to the staff for all the work you've done to preload a lot of this. I know there's still a lot more work to do, but please move forward. I do think it's a terribly important document, especially the student engagement and student attendance.
Thanks. Marilyn? Thank you. Mrs. McGrath, I'm wondering if you have any ideas at this point how we might be attempting to ascertain learning loss, and any things that you're currently aware of that we might implement to remediate or attempt to remediate that loss.
Yeah, you make a good point. We started that work, and Laura Storm's working with Rick Mayfield and really leading that work. So starting back in the spring, they started talking to teachers and gathering information from teachers about areas that were not mastered, and starting to look at per grade level, what could we see that maybe didn't get the attention that we wished it would have, and really thinking about the focus of using the fall to enhance the things that are taught, building up those skill levels, not going backwards. So it's that philosophy of you have to scaffold what you're about to teach and keep pushing students forward. If you go backwards, you're never going to get yourself caught up. So that work has started with grade level teams and content area teams so that they can come to a consensus around how can you then adjust what's being taught in the fall to address those needs from the spring. At the elementary level, there's also been some of the curriculum that we've adopted. They started to do some of that work even at a national level. of saying, you know, here's the areas that you'll need to make sure to spiral back and to add this information. So that's tremendously helpful that, you know, these groups that have a lot of information to add can do that. Rick's been more involved in that more intimately. I see your hand up there, Rick. Did you want to add something to that?
Yeah, we're in great shape in this regard. You know, the state is doing what they always do, due diligence and making sure the districts are on top of taking care of students, especially those furthest from standard and most in need. And we're in really good shape in this regard. I would encourage you tomorrow to tune into our district-wide PD. It'll be on Tier 2. And we'll be talking about the significant amount of time that we've put into our distance learning plan to have tiered student support to help our students most in need to be successful. I think this is a great strategy and one that our teachers will embrace. And as I said, we're dedicating significant amount of time and professional development to help our teachers to be able to reach out to these students in small groups and one-on-one situations and help kids to be successful. I would even go as far as to say that we'll probably be doing this to a greater extent than we've ever done in our district before, which I think is very encouraging. So we're in really solid place in terms of this document and what the state is asking us to do. We're in great shape.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rick. I've got great faith in you. I didn't really catch the time tomorrow for that PD if we wanted to participate in it or tune into it. I wonder, Dr. Prater, would it be possible to have that put on our calendars?
Yes, I will.
Thank you very much.
We've had 2 days already of excellent professional development. Laura Storm and Brittany Tricamo and Michelle Kass have put together some just really good Tier 1. We spent the first 2 days talking about Tier 1, which is first best instruction. And they've done a great job of bringing our staff together. There were about 430 teachers and instructional support staff online today participating in that on best practice in a virtual setting. Really, really good stuff. Engaged kindergarten to 12th grade teachers. It was awesome. And we also have Silas, our high school DJ, on there who keeps us all entertained with break time.
And, Mr. Mayfield, I'm sorry you're so lukewarm about it.
Well, tomorrow is going to be exciting because tomorrow we're talking, you know, MTSS Tier 2, which is really, you know, what we brought to the board in our initial LCAP document. We said we need to reach these students and close the achievement gap and do things differently. And that's what we're going to broach tomorrow. So we'll make sure that that's on your calendar and you have a link.
Thank you. I look forward to it.
I think you'll find it.
Thank you, Ms. McGrath, as well.
You bet.
Mark? You're muted.
So I wanted to just comment real quickly that I was able to sit in and sort of observe some of the PD that's already happened. What was most interesting to me, Rick, was that as the discussions occurred, it was also a modeling of what needs to occur with the students. And it was just kind of a great circle of whatever.
Exactly. Even the mistakes, Mr. Buckman, you know, we tried to do chat rooms with 500 people and it just didn't work out. And it's a great model to teachers that, hey, you know, this is new learning. We're all in this learning together. And, you know, we have to try things. And if they don't work out, we look for another strategy. So it was really good 2 days. I'm very happy.
Yeah, very observant, Mark. We were working to be models about that. So thanks for noticing.
Thank you. And, you know, I would just add to this conversation, of course, I know the board as a whole really supports outreach and gathering information for the LCAP, whatever it may stand for. But I would also remind everyone that since June, we have had greater attendance and greater participation at our school board meetings than ever has occurred. And we are still receiving a lot more correspondence to be made public than we have in the past. I think that we have a smaller turnout this evening than we have in other meetings, but we still have more people than we do at any typical live in-person board meeting. So I think that just knowing that what we've been doing here has reached people, the opportunity to participate and be part of what the Board of Education does and what the school district does, has created a sense of accessibility and participation that, you know, in the 12 years I've been on the board, I haven't witnessed. So unless it's some kind of one-time giant event. So I think the opportunities we're providing for participation, it's even though this venue, this avenue has always been available to the public, few have availed themselves of it. And I see that this is occurring now, and I imagine it will continue to occur. So it's another opportunity for outreach and participation by the public. So with that, we will move on to 10.03, a child care update and agency agreements. I believe that's Mr. Pinkerton.
Yeah, so, you know, one of the things Dr. Prater had me do was really to connect with our child care providers. So we have the City of San Luis Obispo, the YMCA in town, as well as the City of Morro Bay. And these are providers that have child care with this school district for years and years and years. They ran great programs over the course of the summer, and now it was interesting, right? So the board got, you know, inundated with letters about closing down school and not having in person and can't have kids back on campus. And then, of course, after that decision was made to not have kids back on campus, then the board got inundated with the other side of, oh, my goodness, what am I going to do with my child now, right? I have to work. We have to do this. So, you know, one, I want to say kudos to these providers, to the cities of Morro Bay and San Luis and YMCA, because they are suffering budgetarily. So the board knows, right? So they lack of tax revenue, lots of issues that they're having to face. And they, those boards, and the foundation board of YMCA, they prioritize childcare for our parents and our kids. And so because of that, we've set up programs. So we have, you know, throughout, you know, kind of the school district, Baywood and the City of Morro Bay is having it currently at the community center, but could possibly go to Del Mar. That's an option for them. We have Bishop's Peak, we have C.L. Smith, we have Sinsheimer School, we have Hawthorne. And so with room to grow at both Pacheco as well as Los Ranchos if needed. So really the biggest issue in talking to the child care providers is really finding staff. You know, they're used to after-school programs, a couple of hours, right, from 3 to 6, college kids coming in, those types of things. You know, not full-time child care workers. And so it has been difficult for them, but they have got some staff. They're excited to have Cal Poly students back. So that, you know, who might be virtual, might have the opportunity to help work in these child care sites. And so they've really tried to piece it together, getting information out. But yet, it's still, even with what they've put together, it's still really expensive for parents. $175 to $200 per child per week for 16 weeks in the fall leading up to January. So, you know, in talking to them, when looking at everything, you know, the new federal dollars that the district is going to come in, I felt, and in talking to Dr. Prater, I know from the school board, I've heard you over and over again prioritize the need for childcare for our parents and our working parents. And so, you know, with that, kind of laid out a plan for them and what could we do as a school district to drop that cost to parents to $100 per student. And as well as if there was any copay for our families that are low income that might have to pay $25 or $50 a week, that could be paid for them, yet drop the other costs. And so at the current rate right now, we would spend in doing that and supporting the child care providers upwards to about $300,000 between now and December. But if they fully maximized all of their spaces and used Pacheco and used Los Ranchos and added that fourth room at Baywood and all the other sites, it would be upwards to close to $600,000. So what I'm asking the board tonight is to approve basically a budget to provide that support to the child care providers. It'll be on a per student basis for the Y, for the city of Morro Bay, for the city of San Luis Obispo. And they would be able to go out to the parents and let them know that because of that support, the cost would be able to be dropped to that point.
Thank you.
That's what we're bringing forward for the board's consideration tonight.
Thank you. I'd like to go to the public to see if anyone from the public has any comments on this item. And hearing none, well, I've got Marilyn and Mark.
Thank you. I have been very concerned about the child care issue, and I know that my colleagues on the board have been concerned as well. So I'm really glad that we're able to, I appreciate your efforts in sort of shepherding and pulling this whole thing together. I just, for my own edification, are you suggesting then that the potentially $600,000 that we would allocate in support of childcare for our parents and our staff, that would come out of our COVID relief funds?
Yes.
And not out of general fund monies that we might otherwise have wanted to allocate elsewhere?
Yes.
That's perfect. Thank you very much.
Mark?
Yes, thank you. Ryan, we had the Zoom meeting and on the childcare. One of the things that I heard was that all the spots are filled already. And I know you just talked about expanding it. Mm-hmm. Do you think we can expand it enough? And was the statement really true that it's all full already?
So certain sites have filled up since. I think you're going to get a lot more interest, you know, once we if the board is able to move this forward. But the city of San Luis does have spots. I know that Baywood was filled with 26 today, but that's before they added the fourth class. What we heard from parents, and this was kind of the misnomer, was they opened this up for full-time childcare to start. So you had a lot of people that wanted, you know, one day, 2 days type of thing. So what's going to happen now, and even talking to the city of San Luis today, as a matter of fact, they were even going to start now with, you know, once this potentially happened tonight, to start to open it up to those part-time spots for people. So, they're, again, it's really honestly finding childcare workers. That's their biggest issue right now. So they're more than willing to grow, to have more kids. And so hopefully this will, definitely put a shot in the arm to get them to do that. But I know from talking to parents in particular how huge and important this is going to be for them just to make it, right, over the next 16 weeks.
So if I can, you're looking for action on this tonight?
Yes, please.
Yes.
If it's okay, I'd like to move approval.
All right. We have a motion by Mark and a second by Catherine. All right. I will do the roll call vote. Mark?
Yes.
Catherine?
Yes.
Evelyn?
Yes.
Walter?
Yes.
Marilyn?
Wholeheartedly.
Chris?
Yes.
And from me, who made great use of daycare for many, many years, yes.
So it's been, just as a caveat before I move off of this item, I was at Target today buying every pencil box I could find. Helping with the supplies with the childcare, site. So it was pretty classic. I actually had to stop because there were kids that were buying school supplies there, and I didn't want to take everything. I felt too bad. In a day, Target and take everything they had. So I'm stopping by Walmart on the way home tonight to see what else.
Well, thank you for your efforts.
And again, super appreciative. There's a lot. I mean, there's a lot that goes into this day one, right? We're gonna have all these kids. I mean, even tonight. The thought of the students in childcare having to wear a mask or a face shield when other kids at home are not going to have to do that. So there's some things that, even just things I haven't thought about until today, listening to things that we're going to have to kind of work with teachers and principals and, just just work through some of these things. But I will tell you, the child care providers are really supportive of our kids, and it will go above and beyond to make sure that they have a good experience.
Great.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. All right. Our next item is 10.04, approval of the revised 2020-21 instructional calendar. Kristen.
Yes, so with the pushback of the school year to starting school next week, we also ended up moving our professional development days to the beginning of the year and revising some elementary days. This is the revised calendar here for you to approve.
Thank you. Is there anyone from the public who would like to address the board on this? Thank you. All right, then we'll come back to the board. Any questions by board members? And if not, then this is an action item.
I'll move approval of the instructional calendar as presented.
And I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion by Walter, a second by Marilyn. We'll do the roll call vote. Walt?
Aye.
Marilyn?
Aye.
Mark?
Aye.
Catherine?
Aye.
Evelyn?
Yes.
Chris?
Yes.
And me, yes. Okay, thank you. Next is, 10.05, authorize approval of intent to apply for bilingual authorization.
And this yes. So we have hired a new teacher at Laguna Middle School to teach the dual immersion history class. And Mr. Alice is he's a native Spanish speaker. He has 10 years of experience, both as a teacher and an administrator. The bilingual staff were at Laguna were part of the interviews. They say he's fully capable of delivering effective instruction. However, he hasn't received a bilingual authorization in the past because it hasn't been needed in his positions. So we're asking for a waiver for him for this year.
Is there anyone from the public who would like to address the board on this item? No. All right, then we'll come back to the board. Any discussion? And if none, then a motion, please.
Chris?
Yes, I move approval of item 10.05.
And I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion by Chris and a second by Marilyn. Chris?
Yes.
Marilyn?
Aye.
Walt?
Aye.
Evelyn?
Thumbs up.
Do I see her? There she is. Okay. Catherine?
Yes.
Mark?
Yes.
And me, yes. Okay, thank you. All right, next is item 10.06, approval of the MOU with CSEA. Kristen.
We are pleased to say that we have reached agreement on an MOU with all three of our labor groups. So the first one is CSEA. The date in which it was approved was actually August 14th, not the 17th. But we did reach agreement with them over a week ago, and we're pleased, as is CSEA, with the MOU coming forward to you.
Thank you. All right. Any discussion by the public? All right. Any discussion by the board? Mark?
Yep. So I was appointed by the board. Thank you very much for that, to sit with Kristen on the CSEA negotiations. And I have to tell you, since the second year I've done it, it's an amazing group of people. I'm not sure I could do this as often as Kristen has to do it, because I think, Kristen, one of our sessions was 5 hours. Did we go that last session?
Yeah, most of our negotiations have lasted 5 hours at a time.
Yeah, so that was tough, but it was very fruitful. And if it's okay, I'd really like to make this motion to accept this MOU.
Okay. And if there's no further discussion, then a second to the motion, please. Evelyn? Okay, then we'll do our vote. Mark?
Yes.
Evelyn?
Tomorrow night, I think, will be the first night.
Yes. Catherine?
Yes.
Biden-Harris ticket. Walt?
Yes.
Marilyn?
Yes.
Chris?
Yes.
Me as well. Okay. Our next item is approval of a side letter addendum to the SEIU contract. Kristen, you are busy tonight.
Yes. So this is about SEIU, another fantastic classified union that we have in our organization, and another five-hour meeting, but only because there's a lot for us to discuss each time. And so I want to thank Marilyn for being part of this group. And yes, it's here for your approval.
Right. Anyone from the public here on this? No. All right, Marilyn?
Well, as Mr. Buckman led the way on this, I am the board representative to SEIU negotiations, and they're a great group to work with. They are just very salt of the earth. I really like them, and I like negotiating with them, and it's I don't know if Mrs. Newland would agree. I think it's, you know, they're reasonable and reasoned people, and we came to great agreement with them. So I'm delighted to move this side letter, I guess, to the MOU with SEIU.
Thank you. Walt, was that you?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Walt has a second. Okay, thank you. Marilyn?
Yes.
Walt?
Yes.
Chris?
Yes.
Evelyn?
Yes.
Catherine?
Yes. Dr. Ben
Mark?
And they
yes.
Felt-
and me, yes. All right. Our next item is 10.08, approval of memorandum of understanding with SLCTA.
And so this is our last labor group, SLCTA, and again, a very excellent negotiations, several meetings, but great points. We have great leadership under Emily Capilano this past yesterday or the day before with the teachers, with a 94% approval on this MOU. So it's brought here for your approval.
Okay. Evelyn? First, I'd like to go to the public. Sorry, I forgot. Anyone from the public on this? No. All right, Evelyn?
I'd like to move approval.
Okay. And a second? Chris. Okay, we have a motion by Evelyn, a second by Chris. Evelyn? Chris?
Yes.
You know, they're not supposed to...
Mark?
Yes.
Catherine?
Yes.
Walter?
Yes.
Marilyn?
Yes.
And me, yes. All right. Thank you very much. All right, next we have 10.09, Measure D topic. I don't know who's addressing this, Ryan?
Yeah, this is the, again, it's a kind of a three-part, right, on the board meeting, the board paths to resolution earlier tonight. And so this is the actual termination of the lease and quick deed so that we can complete all the paperwork for the Bishop's Peak office project.
Okay, is there anyone from the public on this topic? No. Thank you. Walt?
I will move the approval of the termination of the lease with Mano Construction and say a good evening to Ron Holcomb.
Yes.
And a
thank
quick
you.
Shout out to Tom Mano and his crew. Oops, sorry.
No, go ahead, Ryan.
Marilyn was the second on that, Ellen, but I just wanted to thank Tom Mano and his crew. They did a fantastic job. They were great to work with, on time, great work, you know, both the multipurpose room as well as the office. You know, kudos to them for what's, you know, basically making a great site for our kids. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Walt.
Hi.
Marilyn.
Yes.
Mark.
Yes.
Catherine.
Tiny moments of surprise.
Evelyn.
Yes.
Chris.
Yes.
And me, yes. All right. Thank you. All right. Our next item is our action consent item. So hold on 1 minute here. I feel like I've got things going from many sources. Okay. So please let me know if you'd like anything pulled from any of this. 11.01, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. 11.02, Measure D, approve notices of completions. Notice of completions. 11.03, approve the quarterly report on uniform complaint filings, Williams Settlement. 11.04, 2020-2021 MPSA agreement for approval. 11.05, approval of warrants and payroll.
Please pull that.
11.05?
Yes, okay. Please.
All right. Then I would like a motion, please, on approval on 11.01 through 11.04.
I'll move approval of 11.01 through 11.04.
Thank you. And
I'll second that.
Chris seconds. Okay, Walt.
Aye.
Chris.
Yes.
Marilyn.
Yes.
Evelyn. Yes. Catherine.
Yes.
Mark.
Yes.
Okay. And me, yes. All right. Thank you. And Mark, you pulled 11.05.
Yes, thank you. I pull this because there was one line item among the probably thousands of them in there that caught my attention, and it was revolved around someone named Walter, but the most dynamic Walter that I know is our school board member who is also running for another term. And I just wanted to be clear to everybody that while I'm sure our Walter has lots of adventures, there was a line item called Walter Ventures, and it really has nothing to do with our Walter. And Julie, I think you're still out there. Can you just maybe give us a heads up on what Walter Ventures is?
Is she with us?
She's coming.
Here she comes.
You hear me?
Yes.
Sorry, I'm outside because my house is just sweltering.
Sorry.
So, yes, Walter Ventures is actually one of our DSA inspectors.
Okay.
There we go.
That was a fee for a DSA inspection. Good. Nothing to do with
potential scandal.
Like Walter's kind of adventures.
Potential scandal averted. Thanks, Mark.
Yes, no problem. No problem. So with all that information and with the good work that Walter Ventures does, I'd like to move approval of 11.05.
And Walter Millar will second.
Okay, we have a motion by Mark and a second by our own Walter.
Understanding.
Mark.
Aye.
Walt.
Aye.
Catherine.
Aye.
Evelyn.
Yes.
Marilyn.
Nothing should hold up payment to a DSA inspector.
And I vote yes as well. All right.
And I vote yes.
Oh, Chris, I'm so sorry. God, I have this whole list and everything. Andy's going to be really upset with me. She makes the list. Okay, so our next item, I'm going to be really careful now here at the very end, is board reports. Does anyone wish to make a report? Chris?
Uh, actually, it should be, I'm sorry to do this to you, it should be 12.02.
It should be advanced agenda.
Advanced agenda. And I'm not sure how the other board members feel, but I do know that the state of California is moving forward on an ethnic studies requirement for high school graduation. And I was wondering if the other board members would have an interest in having an update come from the administration on that, with the possibility that something like that might be presented to the public.
Sure. I see consensus.
I actually would like to.
Mark, did you have a comment?
Yeah, if I can, before we go ahead on a vote on that, I want to fully support Chris, and I know in order to get an advanced agenda, you need another member to support. I want to be very, very clear that the students tonight almost brought me to tears as the father of a Black student who, it's going to happen again, sorry, who will only visit San Luis Obispo when it's necessary because of what she lived through here. And in our schools, I fully support what Chris is saying. And I'm also very much looking forward to what Dr. Prater's, with so much foresight, put together for the Common Ground Task Force. So yes, I'm in favor of an advanced agenda item, and I'm also looking forward to hearing, from what Common Ground Task Force is going to bring forward.
Thank you. So I see that Dr. Prater is nodding. You have full support of the board in that regard. All right. Any other advanced agenda items? Any, Evelyn, are you raising your hand on advanced agenda?
No.
Okay. Then board reports. Chris, did you have a board report as well, or was that it? Okay. Board reports from anyone? Evelyn. Then Catherine, then Walt.
Well, I just wanted to thank the district, district office and district personnel, and really the parents for the community forums that have been ongoing and I think are also ongoing this week. I know that a lot of other board members have participated in them and listened in on them. I myself have found them very informative, and I've heard great feedback from, you know, parents who appreciate the forums, and also the fact that they're recorded. So a huge thank you to the district for doing this for this month, because I think they have been really very informative and keeping parents in the loop in this process, and teachers. So thank you.
Thank you. All right, I have Catherine and Walt and Mark.
Okay, I'll go.
Yes.
I just, as the board's liaison to the San Luis Coastal Education Foundation, I just would like to give a shout out to Christine Robertson, our director of the foundation. And just because she has demonstrated, at least for me, the art of the pivot, which is my new favorite word, because she has been, you know, it's been hard to demonstrate the hands-on learning opportunities that have been created, but she is responsible for boxing up all of those lovely little gifts that were delivered by our very own bus drivers in San Luis Coastal who volunteered to do that. So I just wanted to give a shout out to both Christine and also James McMillan, the principal at Hawthorne, who was also there to help out. And just wanted to give them that.
Thank you. Thank you. All right, Walt?
Thank you. I just wanted to also acknowledge the parent forums that have been really informative, and it's a unique opportunity that this situation has afforded us, because you not only get great questions from parents and family members, but we get to see our administrators and our teachers respond to these questions, and it's really inspiring and heartening. And that, in combination with our back-to-school huge Zoom meeting the other day. I've just never been prouder of the school district. And I just want everybody to take advantage of it if you can.
Thank you. Mark.
Yeah, thanks. I wholeheartedly support both Walter and Evelyn's comments on the parent forums. And you as well, Ellen. I just wholeheartedly want and pray that these types of opportunities will continue beyond this pandemic that's caused them. I think that just maybe the one great thing that comes out of it. I also just wanted to report that as the Slo County representative to the California School Boards Association Delegate Assembly, all 280 members, I will be working Friday to finish up being appointed of about 10 people to the nominating committee, and have been really honored to serve on two other CSBA state level committees. I had some other stuff, but it's been a long night for me. I'm just going to jump. I recently went to the website, the district's website, and was scrolling around and discovered a parent student tech support site. And it is so robust, if I can use that word, Dr. Prater. It includes how to use your new tech stuff that the district's doing to provide to our students. It includes software updates. It includes tips for parents, and it includes a hotline for parents that may need some help with the tech stuff that our kids will be using this coming fall. And I just a good shout out to the whole tech and Jeremy, because they really have been the behind the scenes heroes of everything that we've been doing. That's my report. Thank you.
Thank you. So I have a couple of things I'd like to remark on tonight. One is that, as everyone knows, I think we had created pre-COVID a long list of things our district is striving to accomplish. And they involve other people, they involve the community, things like, Ryan, you mentioned tonight, the climate change group. We have all kinds of things that we pay close attention to. And I want to assure our families, our students, our community, that none of these things have gone away, that their list still exists, but that we've had to do a little shifting around in order to respond to the emergent circumstances at hand. But lest anyone feel that we're using it, I don't think anyone would think we're using this opportunity as a reason to not do things, but that we have had to move things around to accommodate things that have had to jump to the forefront. So I know we all continue to think about our strides that we've made and how far we have to go. And it's frustrating to think that due to circumstances beyond anyone's control, we've had to just kind of rearrange the order of things, but nothing has been removed from the list. And I know we all look forward to the day that we can go back to paying attention to some of those things that we had been able to put a lot of attention and time and effort to in the past. So all those things are remaining. We're thinking about them, and we will get back to them. A couple of other things I wanted to set out are with regard to the opening. Yesterday morning, it was just so well produced and well received and really moving and also very realistic. I appreciated that it wasn't just roses and unicorns. It was, this is where we are right now. This is the way our world is. And I showed it to my son, who is a graduate of San Luis Obispo High School as of 10 years ago. And I showed it to him, and then we began watching the national convention. And he felt that our opening was better produced and more moving than the opening to the Democratic National Convention. So I thought that the people who worked on that should hear that. The other thing is that as we approach this time of a large national election occurring the first week of November, I just want to remind everyone, and you'll be hearing this from me again as we move forward, to it because of these unusual circumstances, that it is important to know how best to exercise your right to vote. And whatever works for you, whatever you need to do, to check your voting status with the community in which you live, and the county, the city, however you wish to do it. But we to take care of that, and as ballots come out, to be sure to figure out the way that works best for you. And Chris, I'll let you interrupt me, and then I'll make my final comment.
Thanks. And you know, I want to, given what you've said, I want to remind everyone that today is, and I'm going to say it this way, is only the 100th anniversary of women's suffrage and the work that women did to achieve the vote, and the hard work that the Voting Rights Act in 1965 did to help other people who were not as well enfranchised back in 1920. It is absolutely appropriate, Ellen, that you talk about voting and the hard-fought efforts that people made in order to achieve democracy in this country. So thank you.
Okay. And lastly, I just want to say that I always try and give thanks where thanks is due, which is to the folks behind the scene here, to Mandy and Jeremy. And I want to give special thanks tonight because we are approaching the first day of school, which is always an incredibly hectic and busy time for the folks here. And Jeremy and Mandy are having incredibly long days to make sure that our students have the technology they need, the teachers are able to access and best use the technology they need, and that the phone calls and questions from the community and from parents are being responded to appropriately by folks in the district office. So I especially want to thank them tonight. These meetings would not be able to occur without them. So thank you, Jeremy. Thank you, Mandy, wherever you are. And with that, I will adjourn the meeting and see you all next time. Thank you very much. Stay safe.
The recording has stopped.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, it means a lot to be recognized.